It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Mike James. Michael James from the Heartland Cafe. Love that dude. I'm so excited to
talk. You know, I was getting really excited about being on until you told everybody that I'm somebody else.
No, that's coming up at
8. Oh, Mike James is coming
up. Mike James is, you're Mike Fouché. You're coming up. You don't even know your own name. Look at you.
Oh my gosh, no. I'm so confused.
Michael James is coming up at 8 o'clock. The owner or co-founder of the Heartland. He actually got rid of the Heartland
in
2012.
I really like their granola pancakes.
There you go. Maybe you can tell him in the green room when you're done.
Oh, really? Yeah, I'll do that.
Michael, 40 year, co-founded back in 1976. He is, kind of the unofficial mayor of Rogers Park. We'll talk with Mike coming up in the big table. But first, Mike Fouché from Aldertrack is
here. That's me.
Too many mics.
Too many mics.
A subscription news site that covers all things Chicago politics. You know, we're talking about an article that you guys are releasing just now about police reform. You know, obviously last month we saw a big mayor's task force that did not mince words,
right,
saying what was wrong with the city of Chicago, right, and the police department, and here are the reforms and the structural changes were needed. The mayor said he'd take that into account. And he continues to take it into account.
Right.
Mike Fouché is with us.
You know, what's interesting actually is that when the mayor appointed the Police Accountability Task Force back in December, he said that this is going to be, quote, a blueprint for all the changes that are going to be made in Chicago. Since then, he's referred to it really as just building blocks and that are just steps along the way. And then he announced, so the task force report came out in the end of April, and about a week later, the mayor had a big press conference where he was going to announce all the changes, and he really only announced that he's going to be implementing about 25 out of the 100 that have been suggested. And a lot of the ones that were suggested were really, really easy ideas. You know, for instance, the idea that there is a policy that as soon as you're arrested, you have an opportunity to make a phone call. And that's not always carried out. Arrestees don't have an opportunity to call a public defender. Well, they can make a phone call, but they can't always necessarily call a public defender that can take care of them. That is, you know, a simple thing.
That's something that I feel like that's the only thing I would know.
Yeah.
If I were ever arrested,
one phone call, and a lot of people, they call, you know, like their mom or something like that. They don't necessarily use it in order to call a lawyer.
Right.
And so that they're not immediately assigned a lawyer. And that's something that could be done. It's a low cost change that could be made. But, you know, one of the really interesting statements that we got, we spoke to a man named Jonathan Smith, who used to run the division of the Department of Justice that did investigations. He doesn't anymore, investigations into police departments. And what he said is, I've been watching the mayor's public statements candidly with concern. And, you know, he said that a lot of these things that have been recommended, they're not rocket science, they're not unusual, they're not hard, and yet the mayor and the city council have continued to resist and not make changes.
And that's really the heart of what you're writing about. I mean, you talk to a lot of different people who were not surprised by the fact the mayor hasn't moved or have sort of scratched their heads and, you know, why the task force even put this together. It is early. We're within a month of the
It's early of the task force.
But the Department of Justice, gentleman Smith, who you mentioned, mm-hmm, he said that this kind of task force usually you're going to get swift action from.
Right.
That things can change right away.
Right.
And this is unusual, even if it's only 3 to 4 weeks.
And that it's taking a while before there's anything that's being done. And even now, actually, the mayor's office says that they're being fully transparent, but they're going to be making sure that everything is done correctly, which is usually the kind of words that you use when you say that you're taking your time. But, you know, we take issue with the idea that it's too early to examine this. You know, one of the things that we show in our article, which is available to anybody, it's free, it's not just for subscribers at aldertrack.com. One of the things that we show is that there have been groups, attorneys, activists that have been meeting with Rahm Emanuel since 2012. And actually, the mayor has issued a number of different studies. There was one in 2013. There was one in 2014. There was another one that was done by McCarthy in 2015.
And these aren't readily available. That's what your article points out, that some of them, they're not even online, that they're on a shelf somewhere.
And if they are online, they're sort of buried in some weird page in some place that you got to look for a lot. You got to know exactly the name of what it is in order to find it. So it's not as if it's easy stuff to find. The point that we make is that there have been lots and lots of opportunities for the mayor and city council in order to take action, not just this task force report.
You know, the other part of this, you mentioned the mayor, and that's a big part of it. But city council does play a role in this in the way that they could force the mayor to move. They could show a little bit more sort of, you know, connected, united front.
Energy
and reform. And they're sort of following the mayor's path.
Yeah. And the chairman of the Public Safety Committee, Alderman Ariel Raboyras, actually went so far as to say, we're not going to be looking at anything. We're just going to be holding on any action for some time. In December, there were maybe a dozen or 18 different ordinances that were introduced by aldermen in order to codify into law some of these changes of reform, that there would be taser training, that every
body
officer
cameras,
would carry a body camera and have a taser. There were a whole series of changes that were made to abolish the independent police
and review authority. We saw down in Springfield, Senator Raul kind of passed something over the last fall. And so there has been movement in other bodies of government, but the city council is sitting on their hands right now.
They literally said, we're not going to do anything.
And this was all, and there were, like you said, a lot of ordinance, even Alderman Ed Burke, but they all seem to be following some sort of backdoor deal that says, you know what, let's all do this together.
Right.
Let's all wait for the mayor's cue.
Right.
Let's not rock the boat.
Well, Alderman Raboyras really actually went so far as to say that in consultation with the mayor, he's made this decision. So they're really, you know, you see right there really isn't any independence.
Now, is there a chance that, you know, that the alderman and the mayor are meeting closed door and they're going to come up with a huge comprehensive change before union negotiations start on a new police contract, and that's what this is about, like putting it all together?
Sure. Or Yeah, actually, a really incredible, magical thing is going to happen when you least expect it. No, I mean, you know, that anything could happen. And frankly, you know, I give Alderman Emanuel a lot of credit, or Mayor Emanuel, a lot of credit. He could make any kind of change. He could do anything he wanted at any time. He could be having secret meetings. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, really what we've seen up to this point is that there hasn't been any political will. And he could change. He could do something really great. But we've seen study after study after study, problem after problem ignored for at least the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, we'll have to pay attention to what happens next. Mike Fouché, you can find that article at aldertrack.com.
That's right.
Let's take a quick break. We come back. We got to talk school funding. The Senate passed a big measure today that essentially funds, gives more money to Chicago Public Schools. But whether or not that's going to make it through the House and then to the governor, then back to the House. There's a lot that still has to happen. We'll talk about that coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a Download here on WGN.
What is that? That's like music for like a 70s.
Well, I mean,
sitcom.
We're talking about politics. We're talking about, this is the kind of,
you know, it's like open.
This is like
somebody's apartment.
This would be the Aldertrax TV theme song
with like brown plaid. Yeah.
This would be your Hill Street Blues right there. That was the Hill Street Blues kind of beginning for you. Mike Fouché is here from aldertrack.com. School funding.
Call me Officer Ranko.
What a great day for sort of suburban city rhetoric. Like the suburban lawmakers.
Let's
Matt
all just
Murphy,
hate one another, right?
We've seen it from Republicans that they are questioning whether or not changing the school formula, funding formula in Springfield, is amounts to a bailout for the Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah. And, you know, so yesterday, Governor Rauner went to Lyons, to a high school in Lyons, and that is the hometown of both Christine Redonio, Senator Redonio, the Republican leader, as well as Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader. And, you know, he had a big thing about how we're going to support the suburbs. And Durkin said, I am not going to support anything that takes money away from our schools. And That's essentially what the bill that just passed the Senate, supported by the Democrats, would do, is that it would reduce money for the wealthier districts, suburbs, and would add money to Chicago.
Right.
And, you know, honestly, there's really no other way to do this unless you're going to increase the spending.
But I will be the advocate for the suburban districts. So they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't do anything in this budget struggle. They should not be in any situation where they lose money from the state. The CPS, Chicago Public Schools, needs to get their act together, get their budgets tight, figure out their pension payments. They've been kicking down the road.
Right.
And they shouldn't. And I kind of see where a Senator Murphy or a Leader Durkin are coming from, where they say, you know what? We don't want you to just kind of, quote unquote, get away with your financial missteps on the backs of our suburban districts.
Okay, that's cool. You know, but I think that one of the things that the problems with that argument is that the suburbs have been benefiting for a long time from a formula that is favorable to them anyway, and they have a relatively low number of poor students. And then the other thing is that actually the way that funding is set up is that the suburbs, suburban school districts don't have to pay into the pension fund in the same way the city of Chicago
does. That's a really big point to make, that the way that the pension sort of pickups are done for suburban districts, the state has been picking those up.
And, you know, this has been a thing. This really right here has been where the horns have been locking. The city of Chicago is saying we're paying extra into the fund. And suburban schools have been saying, well, you guys are screwed up. We don't want to have to pay for you. It's two arguments that are talking past each other. And at some point, I think that the two sides are going to have to negotiate something. I'm not sure I understand why suburban districts, why people in the suburbs think that they will do okay if the city of Chicago goes down the toilet. I'm not sure why they.
Well,
think
it is. I'm not. I mean, they're interconnected. There's no doubt about it, because the school systems and this area should be considered a region, not suburban city.
And there's another issue too, though, which is that suburbs have, and it's not talked about as much because the numbers are spread out over a lot of different places, but suburbs have just as big a pension problem as the city of Chicago, and it's the pensions of the fire protection districts and the libraries and the mosquito abatement districts and the park districts, you know, all spread out. And when you take that overlapping tax burden, it's just as bad for the suburbs as it is in Chicago. I think their point where it's all going to break is maybe, you know, 5 years from now. So we're just going to revisit this all over again for the suburbs in 5 years. Or maybe less. So I'm not sure why it is that suburban leaders have been saying, well, you, Chicago, you got a problem. Forget about it.
Well, I mean, how political is this? Because obviously the Democrats, especially the Chicago Democrats, are leading both the Senate and the House.
Right.
And most of the people who are involved in changing those formulas are Chicago Democrats. And the people who are speaking out, Leader Redonio, Leader Durkin, Senator Murphy, those are Republicans from the suburbs. How much of this is just basic politics?
Well, Illinois has really been playing kick the can politics down the road, politics for some time. You know, we don't want to have to deal with it. It's somebody else's fault. And we've been doing that for a long time, both Democrats and Republicans. And at some point, it's going to have to be addressed and fixed. Every other state, you know, they've been dealing with it. Illinois, we seem to have a problem with that. We keep trying to find somebody else to blame. I'm not sure why. But it is definitely politics. It passed the Senate because of a large Democratic majority. Now it's going to go to the House, and it's probably going to pass the House with a large Democratic majority, but then it needs the signature.
So the governor, even though it probably won't be very, it won't look great to the governor, will probably veto it because it's a Democrat sort of change in the formula.
He doesn't want to take away money from the districts either. He agrees with Durkin and Redonio.
Exactly. So. And then it goes back to the House, which in theory has enough for a supermajority. The problem is
It's not that super. I mean, there's a number of people, not just our guy Ken Duncan, who sat in the very seat I'm sitting in right now. I feel his vibe. Not just Ken Duncan, who would probably vote against it because he's been aligned with the Governor Rauner, but also Representative Jack Franks, who is a staunch Democrat from McHenry County, who says there's never a tax that I'm going to vote for. And if this results in a tax increase, you can count on Jack Franks saying, no way, Jose.
A lot happening, and it's starting to here it is, because at the end of May is the end of the spring session. We probably are going to see some spillover since we still don't have a budget. But, I mean, this is traditionally where we're going to have a lot of action happening out of Springfield.
May 30th is when they got to get it all done. And if they don't get it done before May 30th, then everything. Well, after that point, any budget that is going to be passed has to be passed with a supermajority. And we just talked about the Democrats only have a one-vote supermajority, and we're talking about two people that could flake.
Yeah.
So Democrats really need to get something done by May 30th. You know, of course, you could just kick the can down the road a little bit longer, and probably the next opportunity would be sometime in veto session, which I think is in November. And so that's after the election. And, you know, really what we're looking at here is that CPS is going to run out of money very soon.
Much, much more to talk about. We're out of time. Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com, subscription site covering all things Illinois and Chicago politics.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here.